Now, the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a great Monday. Thanks for being with us. It is a short week. Hope you and yours are safe today, tomorrow. Some of you will blow out on Wednesday. We will be here today and tomorrow as well. And Wednesday, I am going to catch up with Peter King, I believe, and we will just stream that on Wednesday, I believe. So I'll keep you posted on that. Peter King, of course, is with us every week. Today, we have Doug Howler from The Athletic. We have to have Doug Howler because I don't want to say it's chaos with Arizona State. You know, the headline, Pack It In, has become very, very trendy. PAC, Pack It In. Because football, they can't seem to get on the field. And the games that are being played, I don't know how many of you watched U of A against Washington. I put myself through that for about an hour. And I was like, man, it's Saturday night. I need to go on a date or a walk or something. Because this is just dreadful. And yet I'm watching U of A, and they can't be this bad. And, well, their defense is better, but... And, you know, I don't care U of A. I don't care about that stuff. But I'm watching it and just going, man, this is a rough watch. And I see how it ended up. And, well, they came back. They made it close. Like, come on. Come on now. The BYU mess nationally, I'll get into that in a minute. Clemson being upset with Florida State. You know, COVID is just doing what it's doing. We're going to get into the Cardinals. I really like what the Suns have done. I know, right? Like, we're the ones that sit over here on the sideline shooting spitballs saying, what are you guys doing? It's been 10 years since you've been to the playoffs. Barring something I just can't see, they're going to go to the playoffs. They've got a team now. They actually have a squad. They don't have some stiffs. They don't have some guys hanging around. Like, they made a move this morning. It was really smart. I'll get into that. But the Lakers just continue to be the Lakers. They had Marc Gasol. And Michael Jordan continues to show that he is not great when it comes to being in the front office. Gordon Hayward getting that type of money. God bless Gordon Hayward. Whew. So we have plenty to get to on today's show. About 10:35, Jordan Hamm, Jason Jewell, and myself, a roundtable on the high school football playoffs, on the open division, and 6A. We do pro, we do college, we do high school. We do it very well, and we do it every day on our website at sports360az.com. So plenty to get to today. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. Desert Financial Credit Union, very, very pleased with them. Appreciate their partnership. Desert Financial Credit Union is where I do my business with sports360az.com. They're throughout the community. Jeff Meesey and company do a terrific job. We appreciate their support. All right, Doug Howler here in a few minutes. My weekend without having a Cardinal game. Actually, the NFL yesterday was really good. The view of the NFL, if you talk to players, is I just got to get veteran players. I just got to get to about Thanksgiving or the week before and then make the stretch push. The NFL doesn't really get started. I've heard Tom Brady use this through the years, and I totally agree with him. The NFL doesn't really get going, in all seriousness, until you get to Thanksgiving week. And I thought the games yesterday, when I watched Tennessee yesterday morning go into overtime and Derrick Henry busts one off and the Ravens lose at home, what a great win for the Titans. And then in the afternoon, Phillip Rivers and Aaron Rodgers are going back and forth. Phillip Rivers is getting pounded, limping around out there. That was a terrific game. And then last night, you had the Chiefs and the Raiders. And what else can you say about that game? Other than Pat Mahomes is pretty darn good. Understatement of the year. But I think if you look at this week for the Cardinals, so the Cardinals have New England, and New England's not good. New England is going through transition. It's what I'm going to talk with Peter King about later in the week. How is it that they got here? It can't just be Tom Brady disappeared and everything falls apart beyond that. It can't be that. It can't just be a one. Football's not a one-man team in most cases. Most cases. Was that the case? And is Bill Belichick now just not know what he's doing? So tonight's game, I'm very much looking forward to tonight. Like, I preach to you guys, you cannot do football Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday night, and really have balance in life. You got to pick your spots. You have to know when to say, hey, let's go to dinner. hey, let's go do this. Hey, let's go do that. Tonight, I'm breaking all my rules because Tampa Bay and the Rams is what I live for. I live for games like this. I live to see a very good defense, see if Aaron Donald can get after Tom Brady. We have not seen the Rams yet here in Arizona this season. Haven't seen them. Watched a little bit of their games. Haven't seen them. Now it's Thanksgiving week. Things are getting serious. Want to see what the Buccaneers and the Rams are all about. That'll be tonight. Arizona State football potentially playing this Sunday against Utah in an empty stadium. This is what we've come to. They've got to get games in. They're not, I simply don't see how they can get anything out of this season other than trying to beat the U of A in the Territorial Cup game, because that is going to be the game. And we don't know who's going to be on the field. To sit here and say, well, this team's better than that team in most cases, you don't know until teams show up. Like, I was watching Iowa State and Kansas State, and Kansas State had a bunch of COVID going on before the game started. Guys didn't play. Iowa State killed them 45-0. Should have been a more competitive game. It wasn't. You had Florida State, who was supposed to take on Clemson. The very last moment, Mike Norvell, the head coach at Florida State, says, yeah, we're not playing. And COVID is the reason. And of course, Clemson is saying, Dabo Sweeney is saying, no, it's not the reason. And so now you go back and forth. I think it's a bad look on Dabo. I think there's some people at Florida State that look at the game and say, well, it's a good thing we didn't play him because we were down to our last quarterback because of all the injuries down there. And so you try to navigate through and look at teams and say, is Washington really that good? Is U of A really that bad as they showed the other night? And I try to find some positives. You know, Washington State was supposed to play at the last minute. They had the plug pulled on them. Gunnar Cruz was going to get some reps at quarterback. I would have liked to have seen the local kid make it out on the field. Tyler Shuck continues to get better and better for Oregon. Somehow the Ducks have been on the field here the last few weeks. That takes us over to where we are with ASU, Utah, BYU, and Washington. And I bring BYU into this because if you're BYU and you want to end up being in the national title conversation and you have an opportunity to play somebody, because everybody is saying, look, you've won all your games, but you've played nobody. You haven't played anybody at all. And now Washington is sitting there needing a game. And the Apple Cup has been canceled. But if Utah ends up canceling with ASU because of COVID at ASU, if Arizona State's not ready to go this Sunday, then BYU does not want to enter into something where Utah and Washington may end up playing. That's where we are. It's just, so to give you guys like, well, this team's better than that team. Do you really think USC's that good? I have yet to meet anybody that's a former player, USC alum, that looks at the Trojans this year, talk to anybody on that, or see on their social that they believe, yeah, boy, USC is all that and a bag of chips. Haven't seen it. Just simply haven't seen it. And lastly, we'll take a break off this before we get to Doug Howler. The Suns in free agency, they get Crowder at 3 years, $30 million. They re-signed Starik this morning. So I'm looking at Chris Paul. I'm looking at veterans that are coming to or staying with Phoenix. Again, they haven't been able to go out and attract the big name free agent through the years. But if they can retain some of their players, if they can make trades to keep some, to get some players here, as they did with Chris Paul, and then go spend some money, offer a third year in Crowder's case, because Miami wasn't offering that. He played well for them. You know, they offered him $14 million. He said, I'm going to go get 3 for $30 million and get an extra year out of the deal. And so here's a veteran dude that's going to come along. I get all the stuff about, well, they already have Bridges and they already have Cam Johnson. I'm looking at different looks, different lineups. And I actually trust, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I actually trust where the Suns are from a front office standpoint for the first time in 10 years. The wild card in all this is Robert. That is just going to be the wild card. It just is. And so far here in the James Jones and Monty Williams era, less is more. We have not seen or heard from the owner. And because of that, I think they're making some really good moves. I don't think, I know they are. All right, Doug Howler from The Athletic is next. Stay with us. Now, as promised, Doug Haller with The Athletic. Make sure you subscribe to The Athletic because people like Doug, they have families to feed. And it's really good content, first and foremost. And then they have families to feed. Of course, Doug covers Arizona State inside and out on the football, basketball, and just whatever front. Okay, more interesting story to you today. Where the basketball team with ASU is changing up their tournament, or a Sunday game against Utah, but could turn into a Utah-Washington game or even a BYU-Washington game. More interesting story to you today.
Hi, Brad. I would say probably the basketball end of it because we're, what, almost over 2 weeks into the football craziness. So I'm kind of – I don't want to say I'm immune to it, but I'm definitely used to it. So I would say just basketball, the most anticipated Arizona State season since I've been in Arizona. And, you know, big showdown with number two Baylor, and already, you know, it's off and they're going in a different direction. So it just par for the course in 2020, I guess.
So for the backstory, Baylor is number one in the country. ASU is supposed to play them on Wednesday. Last night is when stuff came out on social that the game had the plug pulled on it. From there to now, what have you learned as to why? Maybe you haven't talked directly, maybe you have, as to why this game got the plug pulled on it.
Started with Scott Drew, Baylor's head coach, announced on Twitter that he had tested positive for COVID-19. He had said that no one else on the team had tested positive and that they were full go for the Empire Classic in Connecticut. However, that raised some red flags with Arizona State. That raised some red flags with Villanova, who potentially will play the winner of those two schools. And Arizona State pulled out. So, you know what? Having seen what's gone on with our football program and how this thing can blow up in a hurry, we're just going to find other options. And they had other options. Some teams, Florida in particular, had bowed out of of an event at the Mohegan Sun, same place. So they had some options. So they're, as of last night, they were still going to practice this morning, which they did, get on the plane, which they are. And now it looks like that Baylor decided, you know what, we just won't go. So the Empire Classic is still on as planned, but Baylor's out, and now they're looking for a fourth team to replace Baylor. So Arizona State is still scheduled to play on Wednesday. We just don't know who it gets.
So for the four people that made the program up, of here's your starting lineups and all that stuff, they're done. Just throw it all out. It's kind of like you didn't you didn't win the Super Bowl. We're going to shred these shirts or donate them to overseas to some poor group, right? That's what we are.
I had a story written that had a lot to do with Baylor, Arizona State. So that story you guys will never read.
God.
No one will ever read that story. It was a great story too. One of my best, but unfortunately we'll just flush that down the toilet.
Do you have any inkling who they're looking at trying to get to play in it?
I don't. There are teams available because so many things are getting canceled right now, but I have no idea. It'll still be a good opportunity for them. If they do win, whoever they play, they have a chance to beat Villanova. Villanova, who's ranked number three, provided Villanova beats Boston College and provided nothing else changes. I mean, as you mentioned, you know, we're in a day-to-day thing. Some people think it's, you know, risky for Arizona State just to travel all the way across the country during a pandemic, especially one where the cases are surging. I mean, I think you could definitely make that argument. At the same time, I know how difficult it's been to schedule anybody over the last month.
Doug Haller with The Athletic. Okay, so for fans that aren't aware of just how good this team may be, once we see them on the floor, you're right about most anticipated. I can't think of – I got here in 93, and Bill Frieder had a team that had some dudes on it. This is a squad that's got dudes top to bottom on it. I've never come into a season where there was more anticipation.
Right. I think you and I are alike that we're kind of anti-hype for the most part, kind of believe it when we see it. At the same time, if you just look at the roster, it's hard not to get excited about this team. You have a preseason All-American in Remy Martin. You have a pure scorer in Alonzo Verge. And then you have another guard by the name of Holland Woods, a local kid, went to Portland State, was an all-conference player there. Everyone thought he was going to sit out this season and then replace Remy next year. Well, the NCAA decided to give everyone a free season of eligibility, so why not play? So that's three really talented guards. And then you have two top, you know, a McDonald's All-American and Josh Christopher, could be a one-and-done talent. and Marcus Bagley, who's a top 50 freshman who, from all accounts, I haven't seen practice, but everyone said he's just been lighting it up. So, you know, top maybe 1 through 10, they're as talented as I've ever seen an Arizona State team entering a season on paper. How that translates, I have no idea. But, you know, it's pretty impressive the talent that they have.
I'm just happy on all accounts with ASU basketball because, yeah, the hype and buildup, it's nice. For guys like you and I, we are hoopaholics at our heart. You're from Indiana with the background and seeing it. And we know when there's good basketball, and then we know it's just blah, 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 blah. Let's try to sell tickets. There's none of that this year. I like that they've added GCU back to the schedule. I think that needs to happen every year. I don't know why it took forever, but good news on that front. I guess on the football end, because basketball now, I'm hearing from ASU people, let's just turn the page and get to basketball. Football, Doug, is it too much to wonder why they didn't bubble up? Is it too much to wonder why when Thanksgiving is here and students aren't coming back, when I hear, well, the cost is too much, are you guys kidding me? There's not going to be anybody on campus. If there was ever a time to bubble up, the last few weeks should have been it.
In hindsight, definitely that looks like the case. I mean, the crazy thing is Arizona State had done reasonably well from the start of this up until a few weeks ago. I mean, yeah, they had positive cases within the football program, within the athletic department, but nothing major, nothing that was going to just, you know, put the entire program on pause. But, you know, it doesn't take much. I mean, it's always been kind of, I think, unrealistic to think college kids were going to live in a bubble in the first place, Brad. I think I just didn't think it was going to be realistic. And, you know, it's really just torpedoed their season. I mean, I don't even know how much of a season this was to begin with, but, you know, I know a lot of people within that building didn't think there was a chance that they would get to 7 games, but I don't think many saw it just fall apart like this. You know, I think there are people who still doubt whether Sunday's game happens just because there are so many hurdles. I mean, they're not even practicing yet. I mean, they have a game on Sunday, and as of right now on Monday, they're not practicing, and they haven't practiced since November 11th. So, I mean, what are we going to see for them? Even if they are on the field on Sunday, it just seems like, you know, just kind of like, what are we doing here?
Okay. So the Pac-12 has said that they can add outside of the conference. Is that an option for them to try to get in more than just a couple of games down the stretch?
It would be difficult. I think it all depends on whether or not they kind of extend the season toward the end. Now, granted, if they have a game that's, you know, against UCLA that doesn't happen because UCLA has issues, then yeah, maybe. But, you know, right now the program is – I don't even think they're to a point where they can think that far ahead. I think they're just trying to field a team for Sunday, see what that looks like, get everybody healthy. I mean, everyone kind of just glosses over the fact that, you know, Herm Edwards tested positive and – you know, from what I've heard, he's doing fine, but he did experience some mild symptoms. Some other coaches tested positive. I have not heard how they're doing. So, you know, there's a lot that they have to hurdle before they even get a chance to think about what they might do down the line.
I think that's one point, because there are people that just want to get through the COVID part and just talk football. And it is a difficult conversation on my part, because I'm just disgusted with a lot of what I'm seeing. I do, though, think it's fair to ask you about Jaden Daniels. And Jaden Daniels came in with all this hype and buildup, and he lived up to it as a freshman, I thought. And then we were sitting here looking at him at the USC game, and now his second year is being derailed. He's still going to go a year from now, from my view, and if I'm to believe, you know, just the chatter. So from people whose opinions I do respect and trust. What does this do for him? You know, because if you look at where he is this year, he can't really do much with his resume.
Oh, it sets him back. Without question, it sets him back. And I think it would have been an interesting year from Jaden. I mean, with that first game, obviously we saw him do some more things with his legs, things we didn't see last season. But more importantly, I think we saw what the absence of Brandon Ayuk and Kyle Williams, two very steady receivers means for this team. I mean, they have talented young receivers, but they're very young, and USC kind of took advantage of that. So I would have been interested to see how Jaden progresses through that, how he bonds with those receivers. But as far as his development goes, you know, it slows it down without question. I agree with you. I think everything for him is planted toward or is headed toward leaving a year early, getting to the NFL as soon as possible. I think he was on that track entering the season. I don't know exactly what it will do, but basically, he's going to have to really kind of put in a lot of off-season work in the spring to kind of get accelerated back up to, where he needs to be entering his, I guess, technically it'd be his junior year, but ineligibility wise, he would still only be a sophomore.
Right. Before I get you out of here and talking with Doug Howell at The Athletic, make sure you subscribe to The Athletic. I've not heard of layoffs at Arizona State. I've heard of layoffs throughout the conference. What is going on? How are they able to get through it?
Great question. I've asked that many, many times. And as of right now, Ray Anderson has said publicly several times that they're not going to do that, that they have no plans to do that. But with all the income that is associated with football, the fact that they're losing money just by not having games. It's not talked about a lot, but every canceled game in the Pac-12, not just for Arizona State, but across the conference, is $5 million in television revenue money that the conference doesn't get. That money is distributed evenly among the conference members. So they're losing money even now. So it's going to put them in a pinch. They can borrow money from the conference to keep things afloat, keep things steady. And Ray Anderson has said that that is an option that they will consider. So I imagine they will go that route. But I do give them credit for not doing it because, schools early on were making changes, eliminating sports, furloughing employees. Even the conference did. Yeah. For Arizona State to, stick by its employees up to this point, at least publicly, that they deserve credit for that.
Anything else you want to add about what's going on right now that I haven't asked you? Like, because sometimes you and I just sit and chat and rap and chop it up, and it may be, Brad, you're missing the point on this with basketball or that with football.
I just feel bad for the Arizona State fans, just because this was a year that, I wasn't sure the football team. I wasn't as high as them. I picked them to finish second in the South. I wasn't sure that they had a chance to really challenge. Maybe they did. I don't know. But the fact that Jaden Daniels, the excitement around him, the basketball team in a place that they haven't been, as we said, with their talent, I feel comfortable saying that they have Sweet 16 potential. That doesn't happen in Tempe. And at the same time, you have to think, this is a program that's won one NCAA tournament game in the last 11 years. So baby steps. Mm-hmm. But there was a preseason excitement surrounding ASU basketball that I had never seen. And the fact that it's already, COVID just chipping away at that already, that's disappointing for fans. It's disappointing for media. Obviously, it's disappointing for the athletic program. It's just, the state that we're in, and, we'll see where it goes.
Well, as you're joining me live here on Monday morning, by the time we get to Monday afternoon, this will all change.
None of it will matter.
None of it. All this will just be, ASU is going to play somebody, they're going to play Kentucky at the last minute, and ASU football.
And Jane Daniels will opt out.
Yeah, right. This is all in the next, few hours. So I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time and insight as always. Stay safe.
Good catching up, Brad.
There's Doug Howler with The Athletic. Make sure you subscribe to The Athletic, and we're back with more after this timeout. So now that the brackets are out, we know who is in the open division. We know who's in 6A. I wanted to have Jason Jewell, the head football coach at Brophy, and an alum of Sports 360 AZ, who covers the high school scene, covered it for years, and does a great job over at Brophy, and then Jordan Hamm, of course, in the recruiting roundup. All right, guys, let's just be free-flowing here. I thought in the open division, to me, to see Desert Edge as the 8th seed was nothing more than we got to get clicks on our website and we got to get chatter going for the entire week. To me, Desert Edge was one of the top 4 teams that I saw in person. I don't know how South Point is there. Sorry, Tucson. If the AIA felt they had to have representation, that's on them. Those are some of my early hits. Jason, what did you see coming right out of the gate on the open?
Yeah, I agree with you. The Desert Edge being an 8 seed seems kind of low. They do have a solid body of work. I know they beat Cactus, Ironwood, Sunrise Mountain, and O'Connor, I believe. So they have a solid body of work, and then they're loaded with Division I football players. The Carters have done a good job of what Coach Welbrock and Lucero kind of started at Desert Edge and continuing that. To be honest, I'm really happy for my old high school head coach, John Bechtold, over at Corona del Sol. I don't think they've lost a game in their program this year at any level. So fired up. I know they get to play a very tough Hamilton football team, but I'm excited for Coach Bechtold.
What's going on over there, Jason? What are you hearing about Corona del Sol? Because they clearly are the Cinderella story.
Yeah, I mean, Coach's done a great job. He labored for years at Washington, my alma mater, and moved around, went to Greenway and then to Corona. And he's a fantastic football coach. I always thought he was one of the most underrated guys, coaches in the state, and I'm glad that he's having success. I'm going to try to get out to that game this week.
Jordan, what are you seeing in Corona del Sol? Let's just get right into that and then some of your other thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's an all-around really solid team. And I think a lot of people, the people that kind of doubt Corona del Sol will look at their schedule. And yeah, it's not the strongest body of work, but look, it many years, you can't really control who you play, especially this year. Right. You can't control who you play. You just have to get games in. And they were able to do that. And they didn't get a lot. They didn't have a loss in their entire program. So that's a great body of work. Jake Schmidt, a guy who is committed to NAU, is a really good football player, plays, you know, on both sides of the ball. And I think this is just an all around solid football team. So great to see a name I don't think was really on anyone's radar coming into this year, to see them get into the open. Now we'll see, you know, what they can do against the best of the best. So looking forward to that one.
I saw them in person, guys, when they played Basha, and they just physically pushed Basha around. It was early in the year when Basha is playing a true freshman quarterback, and they're still doing it. I think he was on roller skates a little bit that night. But Corona del Sol just looked well-coached, well-disciplined. I thought to myself, leaving that game, like, you know, that's going to be a team that's there in the postseason. Can they give Hamilton, Jason, a game at all?
Yeah, they're going to give them a game. It'll obviously, it's going to be a tough one. They're the underdog, and they should be. Hamilton loaded. They're a good football team. So, but coach is good for a couple trick plays here and there and some onside kicks and things like that. He'll keep the Huskies on their toes.
Stick with you, Jason, for a second. Just overall, when you look at the open top to bottom, is there anybody that can touch Chandler, or are we just merely playing out the string?
Yeah, I mean, we saw, you know, Friday night, you know, everyone thought Hamilton was two seed, and obviously they probably still are. I mean, their win is over a big win over Saguaro, lose by 20 to Chandler on Friday night. So obviously Chandler is the big dog, and rightfully so. I think Hamilton does deserve to be the two seed, and Saguaro to be right there in the mix, being that three seed with their lone loss being to Hamilton in a close one, also on national TV. I think
you played them early in the year. You played Saguaro.
Yeah, we did. They're good. Their defensive line's got four Division I players. I don't know that even we averaged 1 yard per carry against them. And you have to prepare for them on offense, basically two different styles of offense. You know, their one quarterback is a runner, and the other one throws the ball around. So, it's tough to prepare for those guys. Plus, they're just loaded with Division I football players.
Jordan, when you look at Saguaro, is this the best team that Jason has put out on the field? Or are they still coming together? I've seen them twice. I saw them against Hamilton. I saw them the following week against Castile. It was two different teams because the transfers were eligible. Have they had time to gel, come together? All those questions that every team seems to be dealing with in this postseason.
They're one of the best. I'd say last year's team is probably the best to ever come through. When you have the number one cornerback in the state, and you have on the opposite side, Jacoby Covington, who was an absolute monster as well. They had a really strong senior class, but the well certainly is not dry there. That, like Jason mentioned, that defensive line is probably the best in the state, most talented in the state. And then you have some really talented but young players. That's the thing. They're a little more unproven than maybe past years, but they certainly have the talent there. And Chandler, I think, is in the driver's seat. But like Jason said, I would say that Hamilton is in the mix. We'll see where Nico Marchio's health is moving forward. That could be a huge factor. But then Saguaro also is a very well-coached team. And Rick Gerritsen's not going to look over them by any means whenever they meet up potentially down the road.
I think Desert Edge is going to give Chandler a game. And I saw Chandler Highland. I did that game for UVU a couple weeks back. I'll get to Highland in a minute. But seeing Chandler, they are methodical and they go about their business. The one place where Highland had them a little bit was they would put together the 13, 14, 15 play drives a couple times and kept Chandler's offense off the field. Easier said than done, I get it. That's why they haven't lost a game in 3 years. But I don't see this as like last year where Schapp was the one playing at Chandler, and that game was over before the ball even got kicked off in the open. I think this 1-8 may be a little bit more competitive. Agree, disagree, Jordan?
I think it'll be competitive, but I think the difference there, though, with Chandler is, like you said, Highland able to string together some long drives. Chandler rolls about three deep where they can just throw out a completely new defensive line. And those are probably D1 talents as well. So the depth, I think, is really where they separate themselves. So they can sustain that. If the top players are maybe a little bit winded, they can get out and the guy stepping in might be maybe a year or two behind, but talent wise, maybe the same ceiling. So, but I think Desert Edge is a very good team. I think that they have the talent to make this a game. But ultimately, like I said, I think Chandler's in the driver's seat in this bracket.
Jason, well, you look at Desert Edge though, you know, they're loaded. We know that. But Chandler is super loaded. Like, I think they had like 21 kids with Division I offers. And then just you look at the body of work, you know, Chandler is undefeated, but with huge wins over Hamilton and Saguaro, the next two seeds in the Open 8. So while I do think Desert Edge is a quality football team with a good body of work themselves, but Chandler, I think, is the clear-cut number one.
Jason, talk a little bit from a coaching view, Centennial Liberty. Here's two teams we haven't really talked about much. You've seen them.
Well, we played against them, and they kicked our butt, both of them. And then I went to the game on Friday night because, you know, we were shut down. Our last game against Williamsfield was not played. So I lived next to Liberty and walked on over there and saw a good football game. So I think there will be people that will question Liberty being in with three losses, especially one of them being to, you know, Sunrise Mountain, who, I mean, they're the 5A number one, but, I mean, people might question that a little bit. But good, physical, big football teams that are also very, very well coached. I really like both of their defensive. Andrew Taylor at Centennial does a fantastic job. And then Travis Guinea, who came over from Desert Edge, is doing a great job at Liberty. These guys fly around and smack each other. And Liberty had the lead at halftime, 21-14. And then Centennial kind of took over. Liberty turned the ball over a couple times late. I don't love these rematch games, especially back-to-back. Mm-hmm. I mean,
Why don't you like them?
It's just not fun to me. Like, you play, you know, the kids who play two weeks in a row. I mean, that's not fun. You know, when you play a team again, one, it's tough to beat a team twice, but yeah, I don't know. I just don't love it. Maybe it'd be, if it was spread out, it'd be a little bit different, but to play them back to back, I don't know if that's a whole lot of fun.
If you're lining up against those two teams, where do you see an advantage for Centennial or Liberty in a rematch next week?
Well, Centennial, on offense, their offensive line is just huge. And then they're very deep at running back. You know, they have two or three kids that can really go. And that's ultimately what ended up happening on Friday night was Centennial's run game was able to kind of take over and pound the football a little bit.
It's good for the East Valley, or the West Valley, I should say, Jordan, because we've heard a lot about East Valley football, so on and so forth. And it's just been Centennial and maybe every now and then, but now these Liberty's established. They're there every year, either 6A or in the open now in the second season. I think it speaks well with Desert Edge too in their rise.
Yeah, you'll hear on Twitter all the times about the debate of what's truly West Side and what's West Valley. I don't know. We'll say west of the 17.
Yeah,
but those teams, yes, it's you usually see Desert Edge as a very consistent program. Over the past few years, they've been able to take it to the next level, not only in their competition, but in who is getting recruited from these big time programs. Same goes for Liberty. They are a very consistent program. That, I think that's kind of the name brand for these top programs on the west side of the valley, is they're consistent. They play really sound football. They play physical football. They're the type that, like in pool basketball, some people will splash you while you're shooting. All of these teams try to drown you. So they want to out-physical you. So that's kind of been the name brand, and you're seeing more and more of these programs make the ascension, and Centennial really continue to play at that high level.
Well, how about Liberty keeping it rolling with, you know, a brand new head coach and a new defensive coordinator? I mean, good for Coach Thomas.
All right, let's switch over to 6A, guys. What jumped out at you, Jason, in the 6A bracket?
That's a bracket that I thought was very, very deep, and you look at the two teams that didn't make it, Williamsfield and Mesa Mountain View, that were right there. It's hard to keep those guys out. And then when you go back and you look at all the games, and everybody's body of work is a little bit different. Some are playing eight games and some seven, and it's crazy. So you can start looking at matchups and who beat who, you know, and Boulder Creek, you know, lost to Castile by one, but they were winning. And you go back and then you look at who Castile lost to. It's just crazy. So I think that is a wide open race there. But looking at it feel bad for, you know, Williams Field and Mason Mountain View not getting in, but at the same time, who do you take out? You know, where mm-hmm. Chaparral has that convincing win against Pinnacle to ultimately get them in. It's who do you take out versus who needs to be in?
Jordan?
The two matchups in the first round that jump out to me, Highland and Castile, I think two styles. It's going to be the really strong passing offense against the really strong passing defense of Highland. And then also Chaparral and Queen Creek. You know, Chaparral is not your typical seven seed. It's much like Hamilton last year in the open division. They were in the 2-3 range and then lost to Chandler. All of a sudden they dropped to seven. That wasn't your typical seven seed. And I think that's the case with Chaparral. I swung by towards the third quarter of that Chaparral Pinnacle game, and it was already like running clock. Like they had already pulled the starters because they were that far ahead. Brayton Silbor, he's taken advantage of every opportunity that he's gotten. They haven't been able to play a ton of games this year, but when he's on the field, he's making big plays with his arms, with his legs as well. And then the defense has some playmakers as well. Jack Witten in the secondary, committed to Brown right now. And then Anthony Lucas, just a monster on the defensive line. So Queen Creek, I think Joe Germain knows not to overlook Chaparral just because they're a seven seed and they're the two seed. But this is going to be a really good matchup with a lot of D1 talent on the field.
So Jason, I'm going to go back to something you said on Liberty with three losses. Having seen Highland in person, to me, you can make the argument that Highland could have been in the open. They lost to Queen Creek. One of their top offensive linemen was contact traced the day of the game. Didn't play. That's not good in a game like that. Then they play Hamilton and Chandler in back-to-back weeks. And they gave Chandler a game for about the first few minutes. Chandler had him on the ropes. Highland came back. I really like where Highland is as a team coming into this. I think, you know, Chaparral, it looks like, Jordan, they've come along, but they didn't play Saguaro. That game got wiped out. Is it fair to teams, to Jason's point? I saw Williams Field twice, and it was typical Steve Campbell. They lost early in the season, didn't look great, and then they just started mowing over people and winning close games too. So I know this is really an uncertain year, but I think the 6A is wide open. Jacob Cisneros is probably the wild card in all this for Boulder Creek. As he goes, so go they, right?
Yeah, and Bear Milicek at quarterback at Boulder Creek, he's a fantastic football player too. You know, we tried to take out Cisneros, and at the very end, they just ran like six quarterback runs with Bear and basically won that game. You know, so Boulder Creek, they, you know, a one-point loss to Castile really early in the year. They're playing fantastic.
And I was Boulder Creek game, and that was in that game. Cisneros had over 300 yards of total offense. He was like Christian McCaffrey, and it was very, very close. I mean, you can make the argument for them as a one seed, Jordan.
And they're up in the very northern part of the valley, and I think that they're fine kind of being off everybody's radar a little bit. They're going to go handle what they need to go handle, and they've had some guys maybe get overlooked the past couple of years on the recruiting front that are very, very talented, and we've seen Hendrix Johnson do what he has done at NAU, but now they're the one seed, so the eyes are on them. So Bear, I love when he steps out on the field. He has a swagger to him where it's just like, I know I'm good. I'm going to go get my guys the ball, and we're going to see what's going to happen. It's a confidence, not a cockiness. And Cisneros is just this workhorse that can help you in so many different ways. And they have some size up front as well. So I think that they're a very intriguing 6A one seed option.
Were they the right seed as a one seed, Jason?
I mean, they have one loss, you know, to a very good Castile football team. So, I mean, I'm sure Queen Creek can make the argument that they need to be there, or even Highland, like you said, they're a four seed with three losses. The three losses ultimately why they're down there. But then you turn around, just like you mentioned, Liberty has three losses and they're in the open, where Highland gave Chandler fits just a couple weeks ago. So you said it. This is a wide open 6A race, and this is what makes high school football fun.
Jordan, you good with Boulder Creek?
I'm good with Boulder Creek as the one seed. For the most part, they delivered, and yeah, their only loss was to a one point loss to a good Castile team. And yeah, there are plenty of options here. Even though I think that Boulder Creek team knows they're the one seed, they know that they're going to have to deliver for the next 3 weeks if they want to be the 6A champion. It doesn't really matter necessarily that they're the one seed, because when you look through this bracket and it's just eight teams, it's eight pretty darn good teams. And we've talked about the teams that haven't made it that are so good. So this is a really good group. So I think they know they're going to have to deliver and prove, you know, prove the committee, prove the computers right that they're the one seed.
Yeah, I think Boulder Creek one seed. I think South Point making it in the open. I know there's some Queen Creek people that think they should have been in the open. I disagree with that, but that's just me. I think those are the biggest takeaways that I'm hearing so far. You guys see anything different in those takeaways?
It'll be interesting with South Point just because it's so every year comparing 4A, 5A, 6A, it's always a little bit apples to oranges, but then you, at least we knew in previous years, everybody got 10 games. This is now some teams got six, some teams got eight, some teams had to reschedule and, you know, the day of and have games. So there's a complete different element here. So I think South Point probably belongs in there. I don't know about the six seed, but again, this is a team that hasn't really backed down from big time opponents in the past, and they're not going to against Saguaro, so they'll need to have a very good game to be in this with the Sabercats. But I think that they are a team that is definitely in the conversation for the open.
Well, here's another thing to think about that in years past would have never been an issue is who's out for COVID quarantine or contact tracing. You know, that week, you never know if your roster is the same. I know we played a game and Thursday night at 8 o'clock, I got a call that two of our starters were going to be quarantined the next day. So what happens if that happens to one of these schools the night before a semifinal game or the state championship game?
Jason, is there a coach that you look at in this and postseason? I know that you're friends with lots of them. It's not one or the other, but just a coach you look at and say, really interested to see how he goes about this game against this team. Either open or 6A.
There's a lot of guys that I really like and I really respect. I've known Coach Taylor at Centennial for a long, long, long time. And I played with his son and he always has those teams ready. Really, really respect him. I already mentioned, you know, Coach Bechtold over at Corona del Sol, you know, now that Corona is going to have a chance to be the sleeper, the Cinderella team and be in the open. I think that's pretty awesome. And I don't get along with any of these guys, really. They're all good guys. I think a lot of these people do it for the right reasons. But, you know, if I'm looking at it, who's going to have these guys ready? You know, I look at Coach Taylor, I think, or, you know, Jason Mond's been there, done that. He's got these guys through it. You know, Rick's done a great job at Chandler last 2 years. Was he 20-0 with those squads? So, I look at the guys that have kind of been through the ringer and done it and look up to those guys and look at their program and see what they're doing. And hopefully I can emulate what those guys are doing and what they're putting on the field.
Jordan, before we get out of here, give me a couple players or give the fans a couple of players that they may not have seen because they've been watching their teams so closely and their high school teams may be over, or it's the college football fan saying, well, I want to start paying attention here in the playoffs. It may be the obvious names. It may be the names that people may not have heard of. Who are some names, and I'll get Jason in on this one too, but who are some names of some players, Jordan, that fans should be looking at here in the open in 6A that they may not have seen or heard about?
Well, I think, you know, obviously the open's going to have plenty. Along the defensive line of Saguaro, Quentin Somerville, Alani Ma'afu, Darian Dalton, and Tristan Monday. Monday is the one that is the underclassman of the group. He's the one that had the most sacks last year as a sophomore, and he was the one. And he in the offseason, he would remind me of that. And, you know, when I'd ask about, you know, learning from Quentin and Alani and all this stuff, and it wasn't in a cocky way. It was just like, just remember who had the most sacks. So he has that confidence about him. He's getting a lot of looks. They've also used him at tight end. I saw he caught a touchdown in their game against Gilbert. So they have some versatile athletes there. In terms of 6A, over at Highland, Ammon Allen is just a monster. He's a safety, plays so physical, is a great ball hawk. They've also recently moved him to wide receiver. And he, you know, he'll put up those types of games where it's 12 catches, 130 yards, where he'll just pick up chunks at a time. And then the two running backs we've kind of alluded to is Jacob Cisneros and Max Davis. They've had, I think, quieter recruitments than maybe they deserve, but these guys are absolute workhorses over at Boulder Creek and Highland as well. So those are a couple of guys to look out for.
Well, I think look at Jacob Moore, the big tackle at Boulder Creek. That kid is a mauler. He gets after it on the offensive line, and they play him a little bit on the defensive line as well. State champ heavyweight wrestler. I really, really like him and how he plays football. Another guy is Jack Stamm, safety at Liberty. They play like a joker type, kind of free runner, tough to block him basically, and he's the leader of a very good Liberty defense. And then the kid I liked him when we played against him, but then I really liked him last night was Kevon Clark, the sophomore running back at Centennial. Gosh, did he really come on here at the end of the year? And I'm gonna have to play against him for two more years. I don't know if I'm looking forward to that.
and another guy. Oh, go ahead, Jason.
No, I'm good. But.
Another guy that has jumped out to me, I think the recruitment will track this for the next couple of years, Demond Williams Jr., the freshman quarterback over at Basha. And when we were talking about coaches, a guy that jumped out to me, Chris McDonald, the job that he's done for Basha, navigating a tough 6A, a lot of changes this year. And they're sitting here with it in 6A with a talented freshman quarterback, but seeing the growth over the past couple of weeks with Demond and the big throws that he's been able to make, there's some real excitement, I think, over at Basha over the next couple of years. And Chris McDonald, I think, is just one of those very underrated coaches. Got it done when he was at Maricopa, now you know, really turning the tide at Basha, and I think that they can be a really consistent program over the next couple of years.
Well, if we flip the coin, then you got to give a shout out over at Shadow Ridge. You know, they beat Basha early in the year, and then they're a team that's 6-2, and they're the 8 seed. They were not a playoff team last year. And then another Westside team that was not a playoff team that now is a 3 seed, Sandra Day O'Connor, you know, 5-3. And no one's really talked about those guys. And they have a couple quality wins, you know, Verado and Shadow Ridge. So they snuck in, and they're a 3 seed in the 6A playoffs.
Yeah, I'll go over a little bit on Jordan's end because I live out in the area. But when you look at where Basha and Castile are, because everything in the Chandler School District with fans has been Hamilton and Chandler, and rightly so. And when the Purdy's were at Perry, it was different. But Coach McDonald's doing a very good job. He had a couple transfers come in from Hamilton that came over this year. And the freshman quarterback, I saw him early in the season. He's a guy that you pour tomato juice in him, turn him sideways, he's a thermometer. You know, he's just coming along. He's just a little freshman who's, I think, has made huge strides. And I think Bobby Newcomb is one of the best kept secrets in coaching in the Valley in growing young men. I really like what he is all about in developing a program. They won 3A a few years back with Spencer Stowers. He left. Bobby came in, inherited a really tough situation where there were players that were promised playing time and things, and none of that happened under Bobby. And so he had some parents who weren't happy, tough situation. Let's not sugarcoat it. And he got them out of the program finally, eventually. Now he has his own people in. And I think this is a program that is doing it the right way, much like you, Jason, over at Brophy. You gotta get the right people in place. And Bobby's been able to do that. He's got a quarterback that doesn't get a lot of recruitment in Dane Christensen. Dane's faith, LDS, is one of those where the word is out. Is he going to go on his mission or not go on his mission? And I think that's hurt his recruitment to a certain extent. That's just the way it is when you have players that may go on a mission. He's really good, 70% completion ratio. Isaiah Newcomb has had a very good season. He's going to UCLA. They're wide receivers. They have speed. They did beat Boulder Creek. They did beat Queen Creek. Chaparral boat raced them. They had a couple of tough wins down the stretch against Desert Ridge and Red Mountain. And I think if you look at Basha and Castile, two teams that do not get a whole lot of attention out here, but just watch them and how they are coached and how they go about their business. I think Highland Castile, to me, not because I'm close to the program, but just seeing those two teams. I did Highland against Chandler on Your View 2 weeks ago, and they had Highland had Chandler on their heels. So I don't think that's going to be a gimme. And I think Basha, with what Coach McDonald is doing, they're getting it done out here, and it's good to see.
Yeah, and it's, again, it's good when there's more than one power in the East Valley, like we were talking about on the West Side, having multiple teams come up at the right time. It's Arizona high school football is in a really good place right now. And that's one thing, as we debate all of these teams, that means there's a lot of really good football teams in here. So that overall, that's a good thing. And that means that guys are moving on to the next level, and there's just quality programs throughout the entire state.
Yeah. Cause I haven't seen Shadow Ridge, Jason. I don't know. We can't get everywhere. You can hear and see some stuff on Twitter, but do you really think Shadow Ridge can make a push here?
I don't know if they're ready to make a push, but I mean, they're going to give Boulder Creek a good game, you know, and I just, how they've progressed, they were a team that was had a good freshman team. They were solid, you know, JV team as well. And they were, I believe they were 500, you know, last year in varsity. So they're improving, and you know, that West Side's growing. The far West Side, really, that's where that is. It's where out in the middle of nowhere. But, you know, that, again, it's just like Jordan says, good for Arizona high school football to have these teams up and coming.
Okay, before we get out of here, I promise now, a team that throughout the boards you're looking at, I look at St. Mary's and say, this is good for high school football. St. Mary's in a postseason, Jason. I know it's the rivalry, but you have to feel good about that one.
I do, because I sent Coach Lucero a text message this morning telling him congrats. That's a big deal for him, his alma mater. Yeah. And Jose is a good friend of mine. He played at GCC just like I did, and I'm happy. I'm happy for him. You know, Sunny Slope, you know, 2 seed in 5A2. Another old friend of mine. Another Washington Rams, Sam Jacobs, doing a good job over there. Yeah, it's great.
Jordan
in 4A, Casa Grande, being the 1 seed. Angel Flores, a very talented quarterback. Hoping to see him throughout the playoffs, and then for Mesquite. If you haven't seen Ty Thompson in person at the high school level yet, make sure you do, because he is a special, special talent. And he's not going to be a rah-rah guy, look at me guy. Like, he, make sure you give him the attention and go see him in person. Because okay, if
he,
you can.
Is he Spencer Rattler? Is he Tyler Shuck? Is he Brock Purdy? I mean, special.
He's in that zip code of all of them. And seeing what he's done at a non-traditional power, a program that hasn't been at the levels of the Chandlers or the Pinnacles or, you know, some of these other bigger programs, what he's been able to do, how he's been able to develop. And really, after his freshman year, everyone was saying, this is going to be a dude. And he has, I think, far surpassed our expectations of that. He's handled that really well. He's been a great advocate for the program, gone on the national stage at Elite 11 in some of these big time showcases and delivered. So he's another one of that long line of very talented quarterbacks that is going to play at the next level and play some important college football games next year. So if you have a chance to see him, whether it's in person over stream, I know 2020 is a little bit different this year, but try to check out his film, because he is a very special talent.
I was so bummed I didn't get to go see him play. I was actually going to go out and watch Mesquite play Washington. And everyone knows I went to Washington High, and I was excited that the Rammies were in the playoffs for the first time since 2012. And they got shut down the day of the game, you know, that Friday morning. So I felt bad for Tim Mayfield. Did a great job there. You know, 6-1. They picked up a couple games midweek and had Washington back being relevant too in 4A. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff, guys. Thanks for chopping it up. Jason Jewell, head coach at Brophy Prep and an alum of Sports360AZ.com. And Jordan Hamm, knows all, tells all on the recruiting front, the recruiting coordinator for Sports360AZ.com. Thanks for being with us.